Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for coming to the Boondocks, as this part of the conference center is fondly called. My name is Liz Danzico. I'm the moderator of the panel here that we're about to take on, and it's called Getting Unstuck from Desktop to Device. Can everyone hear me okay in the back? Anyone not hear me in the back? Okay, great. So I have a lovely panel to my right that I'm going to introduce in just a few minutes. But first, I want to take the traditional show of hands to find out what the split is between designers and developers in the audience in terms of mobile design, mobile development. So how many people in the audience are designing and are call themselves designers for mobile in the mobile space? So about 25%, you'd say. Okay, how many are developers on the mobile platform? Okay, so more. All right. And how many of you here don't have an iPhone with you?
Ooh. Wow.
Wow. Okay. So how many? Right. We need to go back in the room and regroup for a moment. okay. So how many do have an iPhone? Are you guys the same? Are you raising your hands?
How many of you are carrying two phones?
So we'll say about 30-40%. Okay, and then, so show of hands for Nokia in your pocket. Okay, Motorola, the standby Trio, Palm, okay. Sony Ericsson, I need sort of, slap. Hi. And then Windows, any kind of Windows platform, smartphone, anything. Okay, well, in lieu of regrouping in the back room, we're just going to power through. BlackBerry. We have cheers and booze at the same time. Okay, so we have a mix of just about all of those things on the panel today from the development side and the design side. And I'm going to, like I said, introduce these guys in just a few minutes. But I want to talk about how this panel is structured because it's a little bit different than what we've seen before in other parts of the conference center. And also what we're talking about when we're talking about getting unstuck. So, as we've seen, like time and time again, early websites, sort of emulated their print counterparts. If we look at web design from 1997, 1998, it looked bad. And the reason it looked bad was because we didn't have the technology to support it. We didn't have the skills to understand how to design properly for it. But also, we were trying to use the same principles that we did in print design and apply them to web design. Okay, we know that was wrong and bad, and we've grown up a lot since then. And this is not something new, right? There's this sort of innovate to emulate cycle that we've seen again and again. We saw it with radio, we saw it with film, we saw it with television. Every time a new technology is introduced, we look back at the technology that we're comfortable with, and we try to apply the same standards in terms of building, in terms of designing, and in terms of judging, right? And we do this over and over and over again, and that's okay. But when it comes to mobile, that's a dangerous path, right? Because we're now applying the same principles we did to desktop web design to the mobile space. And what we're going to investigate today is if that's a good idea. Is that okay? Maybe that is okay. Or do we need to change our way of thinking and, so to speak, get unstuck so that we can really break free of that way of thinking about mobile devices as the desktop? Because they're clearly not, or maybe they are, but only our panel can tell us. And so there are some new rules, and there are a lot of questions that start with the word how. So, like I said, how could we break free of this sort of desktop-centric model? Because user experience doesn't stop with the desktop, and it certainly doesn't stop with a mobile device either, but it surely applies to mobile devices. Twitter and Google have been really good examples of how not to get trapped in that desktop metaphor, and we're going to look at others. We're really coming to a point of true convergence. We've had players in the past in terms of mobile development and design that have been strong, but like the passion's never been there, the sort of traction's never been there. Why is that? And how can we approach convergence in a different way? Mobile as a concept is just as ubiquitous and just as sort of murky as the word brand. And so how can we actually come up with strategies for mobile that are inclusive and sort of embody the whole experience? And really have a clear understanding of what mobile means. And if there are new strategies, are there new kinds of skill sets? And if there are, how do we find people that have them and like train them and bring them into our process, these new inclusive processes? how do we stop inventing the wheel like multiple times for different platforms, right? Build once and then have that be used for all different platforms. Is that possible? And how do we become original? How do we think for ourselves and not just copy some of the leaders that are out there, but really understand what users needs, what user needs and the platform and its capabilities? So how can we get unstuck? I don't know if anyone in this room was in a panel last year called Getting Unstuck, but we did do a panel last year that's going to work much the same way. It's called Getting Unstuck, Moving from 1.0 to 2.0. And there were some people on the panel. Chris is actually a veteran of that panel sitting next to me, Christian Bengtsson, Jeffrey Zeldman, Luke Rablewski. And we were talking about how to break free of the sort of 1.0 way of thinking and move to 2.0. That was like a big topic last year. It seems like a long time ago now, like Web 2.0, we all have like a really good understanding, but that was what we were wondering about. And a lot of things came out of that panel. There's a website called stuckunstuck.com, that we set up so that actually Chris and the founders of Magnolia and Kelly Goto of Goto Media set up so that people could actually post ways that they're feeling stuck and not understanding how to break free of old ways of thinking. So why are we talking about desktop to device today? I mean, why are we talking about like 2.0 to 3.0? And the reason is, according to Jason Fried, this is brand new big shit, right? The things that we're experiencing today, and Jason said this in reference to the SDK that was released this week. He posted this on the 37 Signals blog, Signal versus Noise, yesterday. What we're seeing right now is a different kind of thing that we've seen before. It's not new. Like I said, we've seen this cycle over and over again, but we really don't have an understanding of how to design and develop for mobile in a way that that is comfortable and familiar to us yet. So we have some guys that are going to help us think through how to do this today. And I want to introduce them. But before I do, I wanted you to notice that you all have an index card on your seats. And for anyone who doesn't have an index card, there are some extras that we can pass out. So I have those up here, and maybe one of the volunteers can help pass out some index cards. And I'm going to tell you what to do with those in a moment. So my name is Liz Danzico, as I said, and I'm going to be moderating the panel. To my right, I have Chris Messina, who's the veteran, and I'm going to ask each of you just to introduce yourselves.
Sure. So I have a company called Citizen Agency, which provides consulting services to a bunch of folks. I've been involved in a number of community efforts, things like Barcamp and co-working, and I've also worked on a number of open standards projects like Microformats and OAuth and OpenID, and so I'm sort of taking, I guess, sort of an open source mentality towards a lot of this stuff and really trying to push forward the boundaries of the web.
To his right, John Sanjivani, the innovator guy.
That title sets such a high standard. You're sure to be disappointed. It's like movies haven't gotten worse, trailers have gotten better. So I'm co-founder and VP of product design for Zumobi. Zumobi is kind of an interesting spin out. It came out of the research lab, a joint venture between the University of Maryland's Human-Computer Interaction Lab and Microsoft Research. Spun off this independent incubator, a mobile a widget platform. So we have a mobile content platform wrapped up in this kind of sexy, high frame rate, you know, video game like zooming user interface, flybyzoommovie.com. But we're really focused on kind of sponsored platform for mobile widgets, all powered by kind of cool backend 2.0, web 2.0 technologies. So that's my background.
To his right, Raj Singh, the strategy guy.
Liz came up with these labels.
It's not true at all.
I'm Raj. I actually work with a mobile browser company, and I've been in mobile for about, I think, a little over 9 years now, and I was previously in mobile content and mobile web and mobile advertising. So I sort of come from that background, and now I'm actually on the browser side of things. So it's sort of interesting. I'm trying to push, you know, standards to make it easier for web developers to bring their applications to the phone. So that's my background. I'm going to try to keep it grounded, all the battles I've been through.
And last but not least, George Ariola, the in-house guy.
So I'm coming from a traditional software user experience design background where I've actually have been working much more towards the hardware side nowadays, combining and consolidating these user experiences. I'm with Sony Ericsson as the senior manager within application planning, working on the future user experiences for our operating systems across our platforms. But prior to joining Sony Ericsson, which is really recent, I was working at Apple as one of the senior product line managers working on OS 10 embedded, and a lot of my technologies that I worked on have shown up this week within the iPhone SDK.
Great, thank you. So I mentioned that there are index cards that are sort of floating around. And the index cards we're going to use for something called the lightning round. Was there anybody in this room that was at this panel last year? So a few? Okay, so we're going to do the same kind of thing we did last year, and that was each of you have, there's a mix of experience in the audience, and I think that it's important to hear your questions and not just in the open forum kind of way, but in a very direct way, because we feel like your expertise is certainly worth bringing to this panel. So we want you to ask a question on the card. We have an editor that's floating in the audience, and she's going to come around and collect the cards. And so you can ask a question to any of the panelists directly, or one that you want all the panelists to weigh in on. And they're going to have to answer the question in 60 seconds or less. So it gets kind of interesting because a couple of them are a little bit long-winded. So if you could, or all of them, rather, but if you could you write your question, like I said, direct it to a panelist if you'd like to or not, just a general question, and we'll bring them up halfway through and direct them to the panelists. And I'll let you know when that's going to be happening. Some of the questions that you might ask are things like this. We need to think about mobile design, mobile development. We don't have any experience. How do we get started? Mobile development is like some sort of CIA operation. Everything is a secret. Where can I look for inspiration? These are some of the things, and there are many more kinds of questions. So while you guys are thinking about your questions, I'm going to ask the panelists to respond to some of my own, and be sure to write down yours as we're talking. So my first question is just this. Mobile in general is sort of a term that's been used as widely and perhaps as misused as branding. It can mean so many things to so many different people. How do you think the term mobile should be best understood in today's industry as something that's part of an overall strategy? John?
Yeah, so I think the key thing is that it is true that mobile means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And the key, of course, is to think about what are the mobile patterns of use. Don't think about assets. Don't think about the mobile assets and trying to figure out how to shoehorn them onto a phone or onto a platform that reaches across different devices, but think about patterns of use. So like, for example, in the web universe, you think about building a site that's sticky. On a mobile device, you really want bouncy behavior. You're going to fly in, snack on a nugget of information, sports score, fly back out. You're going to fly in, check what the ski conditions are like at your favorite mountain and fly out or something. It's all about snacking on these little nuggets of information. And so I think it's key to think not just about the device, the physical manifestation of the device, think about the patterns of use.
I would add to that, actually, that recently, last week, I picked up a MacBook Air, and it's been a very interesting experience because it is kind of having like a glorified cell phone, in that it doesn't have an optical drive and doesn't have FireWire. So when you're trying to get big, gigabytes of things on it, all of a sudden you have a very mobile-like experience. So in some ways, it's kind of thinking about the access to resources that you have and the context in which you're operating. I actually bought the Air so that I wouldn't have to carry around 6 pounds of laptop anymore, and instead now I carry around 2 pounds of Air and 6 ounces of iPhone. But the reality is that now I can actually be much more mobile. So in some ways, I'm sort of reinterpreting what that means and being able to take more computing power with me with less weight. So thinking about it from moving things from a much richer sort of huge box like the Mac Pro or Windows desktop or whatever into something that you can take with you on a plane or on a boat or wherever you want to go is also sort of important.
Think about it from the perspective of pocket computing. That's the way I like to look at it. You can have location-based services, you could have a desktop-like application or a Web2 app all now within two thumbs distance. And like the MacBook Air or iPod Touch with the keyboard, there's going to be a lot more usage patterns that we'll be able to create, especially as Web2 standards evolve and are more readily adopted within these devices.
Yeah, I usually define it how George initially defined it. It's information lookup. That's sort of the core use case, but I think it's changed over the last couple of years, and I think you're going to see a lot more infotainment. So people may be watching video. I mean, look at the success of a lot of the mobile video sites that are out there, people using it to communicate and chat. But for a good portion of mobile use is looking for snippets of information, and that's why mobile widgets has just been such a hot area in the industry.
So I mentioned in the beginning that I really think, and that was sort of my own opinion, but I think that we're applying the same standards we did to web design in, you know, on the desktop to these mobile devices. And I'm really curious about your opinion. You know, now that we find ourselves with like a really viable platform for development, for design, for user experience, should we be using the same principles that we applied to the desktop? If not, where do we find those new principles for evaluating these experiences?
Video games. I mean, I think, honestly, I think that a lot of the principles that we look at, you know, when we're trying to think about how to create bold new experiences when mobile, we actually don't look, first of all, we sure as hell don't look to mobile. We don't look to up, down, left, right action and two soft keys. I mean, I think that you're absolutely right in the sense that this is a device about communication and entertainment. It's a very personal device. It's the conduit through which you speak to everybody you care about. You store all your photos on it. You have music on it. It's such a personal device that the user experiences that we lovingly craft on these devices have to be held to that new high standard. It's not this thing that sits on your desk or is portable that, you know, it's actually something that's on your person. It's a piece of jewelry. And I think that the software needs to be as elegant as the industrial design of the hardware is. So, you know, things like high frame rate performance and hardware acceleration and being able to use accelerometers, being able to use the camera on the phone, thinking really being inspired much more by things like the Wii and the PSP and the DS than you are by, you know, up, down, left, right action.
It's definitely coming full circle. I mean, myself personally, as well as many of my ex-colleagues at Apple, we would go to the GDC for inspiration. We would look at, you know, SIGGRAPH and GDC and, you know, basically be inspired. Likewise, video game designers look to a lot of the Web2 development efforts and design efforts for how do they, from a social computing, social networking perspective, enhance their gameplay. And you see a lot of this innovation within PSP titles that are coming out today. So I encourage all of you, if you haven't gone to a GDC event or a SIGGRAPH event, definitely give it a try. Go outside the bounds of these types of conferences or traditional AIG or design conferences.
So I have a question actually for you guys, if you don't mind. I mean, in terms of developing these new sort of hardware-based interactions, you know, stuff that's in your pocket or whatever, I mean, we've had keypads that we take for granted for a long time. Obviously, when we move to touch or zooming interfaces, that changes. So in terms of how you guys are conceptualizing designing for this stuff, what are you taking for granted in terms of interactions?
We actually started there. That was one of our biggest challenges early on is that we ran every single, you know, we did Blue Sky Design, and then we ran every design decision through this crazy adaptive UI construct where we looked at resolution, orientation, size, and input hardware independence. So D-pad, keypad, QWERTY board, touchscreen. And so coming up with, you know, not just experiences that work consistently across that range, but also are optimized across that range. And it's a very, very fun kind of horizontal thinking design exercise. And it's also, of course, a non-trivial technical engineering exercise. We had to do some crazy technical kung fu to do adaptive UI in a real performant way, which is why we settled on the zooming user interface metaphor, because it scales incredibly well. But I think that it's very, very true. It's a different problem than trying to design a game, for example, that works very well on a DS. Or, you know, if you have the luxury of having a sponsored application that's laser focused on an iPhone or a Pearl, that's great, but that's much more the exception than the rule. So thinking sideways about adaptation is important. And actually, you might find more fun and less difficult than you might think.
I think that, you know, we have to thank Apple for basically taking something for many years that was a SIGGRAPH white paper, basically, you know, multi-touch interfaces, you know, pie in the sky sort of, you know, thinking, and made it, my four-year-old daughter picks up my iPod Touch and my iPhone and just like busts out with it. I'm at a restaurant here, bore yourself with this. And, you know, the fact that a four-year-old little girl can, or little boy basically can pick this up and just become proficient at it. I mean, this is only the beginning, right? I think with multi-touch, and I think that we'll be seeing a lot more interesting things with haptic feedback, gestural movements. So we have a Walkman phone where basically takes haptic feedback where if you want to flick through photos, you could shake it and actually move from photo to photo. And these are things that, you know, 2 years, 3 years ago, you know, people thought about them, but no one actually started shipping product with them. Now people are shipping products, which is pretty exciting.
I mean, I agree that there's going to be sort of the multimodal interfaces, and you're starting to see vibration and things like that being used in applications. But at the same time, I think to John's point, when you're designing, you're looking at all these different devices, and there's QWERTY keyboards, and there's some devices that are touchscreen, and there's some devices that require pen input, and some that require gestures. And it's just one of those design exercises that you end up having to do in mobile, where you have to think about how can I come up with a framework so I can quickly, without having to build a custom version for each device, how I can quickly make it work across all these different sort of interfaces.
I guess one last point on that, you know, riffing like a jazz band would riff off each other within a band playing music, great music. Look what Joe Hewitt's done with IUI, right? When the Safari browser came out, it's like, we want to replicate, you know, CocoaTouch applications, and he came up with the IUI JavaScript framework, and just boom, it's beautiful. Now everyone's riffing off of that. So this is only the beginning of interesting things to come across the board, with all handset manufacturers.
Okay, so we talked a lot about prototyping, but I'm curious about specific techniques. You kind of touched on specific techniques you have. Like, where do you start with like prototyping your ideas? How do you reach out to user bases? How do you like get your ideas in front of people and test those in such a way that you really feel like you have something strong enough to put out there?
That's an interesting topic. Let me start with that. Having worked at multiple different companies, in particular my last stint, which I nicely coined the farm, the CIA, basically everything's secretive, everything's isolated within their own respective silos within Apple. I think that a lot of us at Apple, a lot of like myself personally, I was Sonny Harrison, and my other fellow designers, we look to outside inspiration, for coming up with these ideas before we actually start putting, you know, pen to paper or mouse to OmniGraffle. And I think that, you know, looking to industrial design, looking to fashion design, looking to just traditional product design, you know, what is Jill Sander doing this season? What is Mark Newsom doing with his new watch line? You know, what is the Audi A1 final product shipping car going to look like? And that inspires a lot of engineering effort that we do, as well as sort of the user experience, the UI that we want to sort of achieve.
We can take a lot of inspiration, I think, actually, from some of those industries that are a little bit more mature, like the automotive industry, who has a really nice interplay between studio process and the refinement around ergonomics, right? So, I mean, in our universe, usability is super, super important. It's such an important part of the process. But, you know, a shift that's happened over the course of the last, I'd say, you know, five to seven years is that the Kai community and the WIS community has gotten so focused on user testing, data, that you end up, you know, what comes out the other end is something that everybody kind of likes, but nobody really loves. It's sort of the software equivalent of cafeteria food. So we encourage that, you know, you sort of inject real industrial design studio process, where you want something that really reflects the mark of a bold individual designer and then is refined through a usability cycle and through a usability process. And it can be informal, it can be formal. There's a variety of, you know, ways, but I guess my feedback would be that this is one of the reasons why I think that we can all look to, because I think actually the video game industry did this right very early on, where they have this really nice balance between studio process on the design side and playtesting on the refinement side. So I think that that's something that's going to be much more compatible for mobile apps than, you know, what has traditionally worked for high volume web apps or even desktop PC applications.
You know, from an independent perspective, I tend to work on smaller projects, and I find, you know, recently, again, switching to the air, I'm trying very hard to start from absolute zero, like scratch. I'm not actually importing any settings or anything from my previous Mac, which I've always done. And it's training me a lot, or teaching me a lot about the barriers, the things that I've done to actually make the system work for me. In some ways, if you actually eradicate everything that makes you comfortable with whatever you're using today, you can start to re-experience the kind of baby steps process that you take, you know, that a lot of regular folks who don't deal with this stuff all day long are going to have. So even if you move to a brand new device and you kind of go through those steps, like, how do I get to the point where I was with what I was comfortable with before? You start to realize the roads that haven't been paved for you yet and where other people might actually fall down.
This is sort of a personal thing I do. You know, I work on a lot of native mobile applications, and so I can't prototype necessarily through just using the web framework. So I actually do a lot of prototyping through Flash Lite. And I quickly test new UI interactions in Flash Lite, and then I put that down in the bed, and then I can play and see if that works. And then if it works, then I recreate that experience in the native code. And that's something I found to be very valuable. And it's a very quick way to pre-test in a user group before having to build it natively.
When you start these processes, you know, after you've looked at all of these examples and after you've thought about how you're going to prototype something, what's your next step? And I'm curious about that because I think that people often look at mobile as a reductive process, right? You have Amazon.com and then you have the mobile version of Amazon, and it's going to be just less, you know? And there's sort of like, what is less and how do you determine what that experience will be given the current state of something on the desktop?
I think that's sort of the beauty of what's going on right now, where you have WebKit in particular that's being radically adopted very fast across a lot of the mobile handset manufacturers, where you no longer need to think about, you know, what do I cut out, you know, and build a completely separate different type of application versus what might live on the desktop. Desktop and mobile they're blurring. Basically, it just kind of depends on what wrapper you can put around it. And this is something that I call, you know, progressive enhancement or graceful degradation. In CSS3 or CSS as it is today, you can basically use the same content, the same web, you know, app APIs, but basically redefine how the presentation layout is going to happen without having necessarily create two or three or four different, radically different implementations of what your product is going to be. We differ on this.
Yeah, I do agree that it is blurring, and what you're seeing with full web browsers on the phone, you're seeing more of that experience that you get on the full web on your mobile phone, which is very good. But I don't see, I still think it's still a ways from how you can deal with all the mobile specific things, such as making voice calls and using things like vibration, or if you're shaking your phone to change the photo, or GPS and location, without having to build a different version for the mobile. And even the, you know, an example I often point to, because, you know, iPhone sort of marketed as a full web browser, and it is a full web browser based on WebKit, but the sites that you browse to, these leaflets like the Facebook app, these are mobile websites. They don't have the full functionality that is on the full website. You can't go to Facebook apps, for example, from your iPhone.
I think that, and just to jump back in really quickly, that's going to change. And now with the SDK, what you can do is basically you have an Objective-C Cocoa wrapper that's going to live on your iPhone, but it's really a WebKit rect that you're going to render that web app into. Then you can take advantage of all the native device APIs. So you could go beyond what a traditional, you know, browser application is going to be and add some additional sexiness to it in dealing with some of the native device APIs.
So, excuse me just a moment, George, for people who might not know what you're talking about, can you describe what that means, like for the user, what you just described?
So for example, you like Facebook, you might have the Facebook application that works wonderfully inside of a browser. And then you basically go into Xcode and you would wrap traditional Objective-C Apple OS 10 programming methodologies around it, basically essentially creating a native application around it. But then you can actually hook down into some of the unique device capabilities that you wouldn't have the ability to do if it only lived within the browser. And as other browsers are adopted, or, you know, other device manufacturers take advantage of this, you're going to see a lot more of this proliferation, you know, happen, where you could do rapid prototyping in a Web2 app and then simply wrap a new wrapper around them. Maybe it's Java if it's going to go down to a Series 60 device. If it's Objective-C going down to an iPhone device, but you can sort of see where this trend is heading.
So there's another trend that's been going on lately called site-specific browsers. There are two frameworks in particular that are very useful for this. One is Mozilla's Prism, and another one is called Fluid, fluidapp.com. It's basically a WebKit wrapper generator. And I do think that there's actually a great deal of potential in that space, both in terms of developing desktop applications that are essentially web apps. There's another app, for example, Mailplane. It's kind of a Gmail wrapper. And actually, iTunes itself is kind of just a wrapper on a web API. So I think more and more, you know, I mean, to sort of, I guess, bridge what you're both saying, in some ways, it's starting with building great web utilities through APIs and then figuring out the faces that make sense. So right now, if you go on the Facebook app, you arrive at sort of a dead end at some point. For example, if you want to see a group page, and they actually offload you to the full Safari-like browser, or, you know, full Facebook app, you know, which kind of sucks, but that's where you're hitting the endpoint of the iPhone specific application design. So it'll be interesting to see more and more if we can develop these more standard APIs to access like groups and photos and things like that, that maybe we have these wrappers that just deal with that stuff automatically.
The other thing that's really interesting, and this doesn't necessarily pertain to the iPhone SDK, but, like, you know, if you want to, you know, replicate some of the really sexy, juicy UI bits that are going on, you could do that a little bit with JavaScript libraries, but now if you merge the two together, in particular hardware acceleration that's on the iPhone SDK, you could use CSS3 animations, transitions, you know, to replicate some really interesting things that you weren't able to do before, and that's being, you know, submitted to the W3C as part of the CSS level 3 specification, as well as, you know, pushing the limit and things you could do with HTML level 5 that typically you'd have to hand code in C++ or Objective-C, but now you can replicate desktop or really, you know, mobile application like functionality within web standards, and that's really interesting.
I think to emphasize here though, you're still building a native application. So what George is describing, you could do today. You don't have to go to the iPhone. There's frameworks built. There's widget frameworks that allow you to export widgets from your website, so you can run them on your mobile device on other platforms. And so it's that barrier of having to build a mobile application is really what I think you want to get over. We want to, you know, the nice thing about the iPhone when it came out, it introduced a world of mobile development to web developers. And I think that's sort of the end goal, because that's building native apps gets into a whole nother world.
Yeah, just to clarify and visualize, I mean, I think what you're hearing is that particularly for mobile experiences, there really, we talked about this over breakfast, actually, there's a continuum where on one side of the spectrum, there's, you know, the mobile web, which is increasingly, you know, the, sort of starting to galvanize some standards around what that means, what a mobile website means, and how you craft an experience focused for this, you know, larger set of more functional mobile browsers. And then way at the other end of the spectrum is a, you know, hardcore, super sophisticated mobile native application that's going to take much more advantage of a particular device. And it's going to require some, you know, deeper sense of computer science and a little bit more engineering and refinement. It's probably going to be bigger thinking. So if you think about like Nike doing a brand campaign, for example, on one end of the spectrum, if they're laser focused on an iPhone population and they want to create, you know, an accelerator enhanced kind of camera phone enabled application, then they might build a native app. And then at the other end of the spectrum, they might just build a mobile site that's accessible from a Nokia 95 and an iPhone and a BlackBerry or whatever. And then there's also the space in between, which is kind of where we are, widgets that are locally cached and have some of the goodness of both. And so I think that as you're thinking about experiences, you're talking to partners, you're conceiving big ideas, sort of think a little bit about where in that continuum, what the target audience is, and where in that continuum you want your application to live. And if you, you know, how much cycles you have to actually build this thing and how many people you want to address with it. And this is really the reach dimension, and this is really the touch dimension. And then there's, you know, compromises in between. So sort of that's one important consideration when you're thinking about these. And these points of debate, I think, will bubble up on either sides of that spectrum, but are very salient points to kind of think about how to focus your design process.
I just want to remind you, we're going to collect those cards in just a few minutes. So if you do have a question, make sure to write it down. And Lydia will be coming around to collect it.
I wanted to add one thing to that. I thought that was a really good point. When I build mobile apps, I sometimes think about what are sort of quick wins and what are what's going to take time. So if I can do a mobile web application that's going to work on the native browser on the device, that's a quicker win. A widget might be the quickest win, which runs through many of the widget viewers that are out there, including, you know, Zumobi. But you know, if it is an application that does require file access or network access or the camera APIs, and that's something that's a longer term task. And then you have to go through the second phase of then prioritizing what platforms you want to build that for. You know, we've been talking about the iPhone a bit, but you know, it's still a percent. So there's the whole other world of handsets that are out there.
I wanted to just go back to the post that Jason Fried had written that I quoted before. And there was one sentence in that post that I wanted to bring to your attention. It says, what Microsoft and Windows was to the desktop, Apple and Touch will be to mobile. And I'm curious if you agree with that, and if you can talk about your opinion on how hardware specific, you know, Apple and Touch, or I guess just Touch, will be.
Well, there's also, you know, on the iPhone launch, I mean, I do think that this was an important week, and you know, and probably the world did change a little bit on Thursday. And I think that it's refreshing. You know, Steve Jobs, you know, quoted Alan Kay when he said that, you know, in order to make great software, it helps to make great hardware. You know, and think about that as a unified experience. And that, in many ways, makes the task both for you as someone targeting that as a platform, and also for Apple themselves, makes the task a little bit easier because you don't have to think about an array of different devices. So in that way, I think, you know, for that subset, it you know, probably will be an interesting platform to target very directly. At the same time, you know, the mobile universe is already a pretty established ecosystem with a lot of moving parts. So as much as we, you know, love the iPhone and it's a masterpiece, and just about every way a consumer product could be a masterpiece, there's a lot of moving parts in the mobile industry, right? There's the operators, there's international variable, there are a lot of players, there's, you know, the enterprise population, there's a whole bunch of different software development shops, there's, you know, web resources, and there's a ton of things to plug into this ecosystem. So while I don't think, so for all those reasons, I actually don't think it's going to be an overnight, you know, phase change where everybody runs out and over the course of 18 months, everybody buys an iPhone and that's the only platform worth addressing. There's just too many moving parts in this industry, sort of to your point. However, you know, that's not to say that it's not going to be a home run product, and it's really refreshing to see them thinking big thoughts and exposing, I mean, virtually every API that we as a software developer wanted Apple to expose so that we could build really sexy, high frame rate, elegant experiences on that platform has been exposed this week. So it's exciting to us and we're thrilled about it, but, you know, and it's easy when you watch the media to think it's a one horse race, but it's actually not. It's a very complex ecosystem.
To me, the disruptive announcement this week with the Apple Developer Program was actually the billing and distribution. So if you look at the mobile industry, everything is sort of driven by the operators. And traditionally, when you were building apps, it was always very difficult to, first of all, get those applications onto the device, and second of all, how you make money against it. And with the proven sort of iTunes distribution model, being able to deliver apps through that and actually charge a credit card for mobile applications is very disruptive, since that's really sort of new bounds that really hasn't been done. There's been attempts through Hidango and Handmark and stuff like that for smartphone applications, but you haven't seen that anywhere near the kind of penetration you have with iTunes. So that'll be really interesting to see if that takes away. It's a sort of a fear to the carrier, sort of sideloading and generating revenue that way. See how the carriers respond.
My perspective, I think the big takeaway this week would be that, you know, when the iPhone was first introduced, how radically impactful it was to say, look, this is, we're up-leveling the bar of what a user experience on a mobile phone is. And that set everyone off in the industry. And I think it's been an absolutely wonderful thing. What came out this week is that not only is the technology and the frameworks to enable these sort of next-gen UX experiences are important, but the tooling chain is absolutely important. And to come out with a tooling solution, potentially hopefully a multi-platform tooling solution, is going to help spur the industry as well, you know, not just with us, but with all the other brands and manufacturers.
I guess from my perspective, I guess I worry a little bit about you know, Apple and Touch sort of being the default standard. I mean, if we go back to the question before about what you take for granted and the platform that you're building for, I'm more interested sort of in figuring out how to fit a lot of dense information to a smaller screen and having a great web browser that supports web standards. I helped organize an event last spring called iPhone Dev Camp. There's actually one going on today at BarCamp. And the reason why I organized that event originally last spring was because there wasn't actually native development. And what I was hoping for was that people would really invest in building web apps that would work in the web browser and that would push stuff that would work across phones and across desktop devices and so forth. What I worry about a little bit with native application development for the iPhone is that we're having sort of the Facebook appification of the mobile space, where you're just building apps for the iPhone because it's sexy and it's sweet. But in fact, eventually over time, you end up with sort of, you know, whether it's the one horse or not, it's running in its own track. And I think actually that minimizes and decreases competition over the long term. And so I worry that in general, if we don't figure out ways of having better cross-platform open standards to drive this stuff, that we're going to, well, Steve is going to have a lot of say over what happens next.
And there's a lot of other big problems to solve in mobile, you know, that the iPhone hasn't addressed. Eyes-free interaction, accessibility, eyes-free text input in general. I mean, there's a lot of big, hairy problems in mobile that are still out there for, you know, today's leaders of business, technology, and entertainment to really address and do dramatic things with, whether it's on iPhone or other platforms. So, I mean, I think that, you know, our work here isn't done. In fact, it's a really exciting time to be at the sort of base of what I think is going to be a crescendo in mobile innovation. Not, you know, I think this device might have been the catalyst, but I think that there's going to be a bunch of innovation across the world and across the industry.
So we're going to... questions are all in, and so we're going to take questions from the audience based on your cards in just a few minutes. So I wanted to talk about the future. I mean, to John, your point just now, if you guys can talk about just your predictions, not specifically necessarily, but just what you're thinking for the next 3 to 5 years in terms of, you know, what we'll be using, what the events of this past week have allowed us to do.
Okay, well, one thing that comes to mind is that I actually read another interesting blog post. It was an Engadget. And one of them said, is iPhone the next Wii, you know, and that was an interesting, I think that we might be at the stage, not just with iPhone, but with all the innovation I just talked about, with people thinking about this as an entertainment device, not just as a, you know, telephony handset, not just iPhone, but, you know, future devices that have cellular radios that might be sold through a gaming channel or through a media consumption channel. What we're going to start seeing happen, which is a really exciting thing in the kind of multidisciplinary machine in which we all live and work, is that you're going to see category killers in one segment hop over and be a category killer in another segment, right? At a time where in the universe of retail a decade ago, where, you know, Walmart will, you know, ended up really displacing Toys R Us, we're going to see the same thing happen where phones, you know, I don't know if iPhone's the next Wii, but it's almost definitely the next PSP, you know? So, I mean, I do think you're going to see some of these track jumping happening where you're going to see crazy things popping and you know, if you five years long, particularly in this industry, so I would never be so foolish as to predict what's going to happen that far out. But I do think that it's going to be wild when we, you know, look back at this panel 5 years from now. We're going to see even what we think of as a phone is going to be very, very different. What we think of as a gaming console is going to be very, very different. We're not going to have these pillars. You know, once upon a time, you'd buy a physical machine that was a word processor and a physical machine that was, you know, something. So, I mean, I think that the world is about to, different categories as we can see them today are going to change radically over the course of the next 5 years, which is super exciting, creates all kinds of opportunity.
What I'm hoping for in the next 5 years is the one of the things the iPhone did was obviously increased web browsing because they put a fully functional browser on the device. And I work for Skyfire, that's a mobile browser company, so I'm biased. But where I hope it's going is we can get a richer browser on these phones. And by doing that, there would be less of a need to build these native applications, and web developers can build fully functional applications through the browser. And I think that's where it's going. And you're starting to see a lot more full web browsers on these devices. That being said, even 3 to 5 years from now, web standards evolve at a similar pace. So there might not be Flash. There might be a new standard. And this new standard requires, you know, 5 megabyte downloads versus the 200K Flash downloads today. And all of a sudden, you know, the networks aren't moving at that same speed in mobile. So there's still that sort of layer of, you know, I need to optimize the content in terms of bandwidth to provide DSL to speed everybody wirelessly. That's going to take a long time. So I'm hoping, you know, the iPhone has done a really good job bringing web developers to mobile very quickly. And I'm hoping you're going to see more and more of that innovation across other devices because of better browsers.
I think rather than worrying what's going to be happening 5 years out, 3 years out, I think it's more important right now for everyone who has not been in the mobile space to really just start executing and building really nice, you know, existing today mobile compliant Web 2 applications, and then worry about, you know, what's going to happen in the future then, just because there's too many variables. It's too hard to predict what's actually going to be happening.
You know, if I were going to say anything about that, I guess I would look at how we're conceptually going from a way of understanding, you know, a mobile device, which has typically been a phone, to one that is more of like a handheld computer. And as such, because we're getting the full web or a much richer web on it, we're moving from phone number based identifiers to things that are more web compatible, whether those are email addresses or URLs, things like that. Those are starting to permeate into the phone. And I think that in terms of getting ready for that or seeing what's going to happen over the next several years, it's kind of about realizing that people are going to have several devices in several contexts, whether it's at school or at home, you know, or when they're traveling, and they're going to need access to their data and to their friends. And I think part of it is figuring out the architecture of the cloud or moving mobile devices to be more architected around the architecture of the web than they've been so far. I think that whether it's syncing or whether it's live access to data that's stored elsewhere, you know, from a service provider perspective, really investing in that architecture of openness and accessibility is going to be key, I think, to successful apps that are going to actually sustain and be able to pull themselves from where they've been in the past to where they're going in the future.
I think that's really insightful. Actually, that's a really insightful comment. I mean, I think that maybe not in 5 years, but certainly in 10 years, it's sort of the idea of a discrete phone number will be very quaint and historical, you know, like as in the same way that we think about IP addresses. Yeah. Once upon a time, you would actually access a machine based on an IP address. All that's going to be abstracted, and you'll have different points of presence through different kind of social conduits, and that's actually an excellent point. I agree.
I would ask our editor if there are cards to be from the audience. So as I said, we're going to move to the lightning round. Okay, so the panelists have 1 minute or preferably less to answer each of these questions. And it looks like we have about, I don't know, maybe 60 questions or so to get through, which we won't actually get through them all. We may, depending on how long you guys want to stay. So as I mentioned before, don't feel the need for every one of you to weigh in, but let's just answer the question and we'll move on. I will buzz you if you go over. Okay. What are the key differences with mobile users in the U.S., Europe, and, say, Japan and Korea?
Which is their primary network connectivity? I mean, basically, in Japan, you used to have to buy a leased phone line, and now everyone just uses their mobile phone as their main number, main contact. And, you know, with 100 megabit, you know, connectivity and 3G, it's really not that much of an issue anymore. I think it's ethnographically speaking different in every country. You need to look at that when you're designing a product.
One thing to add real quick, if you look at like the top web browsing countries, US is obviously up there, but if you look at like South Africa and India, they have huge amounts of web traffic, and that's because they don't have broadband at home, right? So they're browsing the full web on their device. That's their only access to the web. So they end up doing a lot more functionality than maybe users in the US do, which they prefer to do on their desktop.
5 seconds now. Okay. How can or will open formats such as OpenID be used in proprietary platforms that mobile devices use?
Well, as long as these things open up to at least the web browser, there's an avenue there for inserting open formats and open technology into the stack. And this is something that's been very, very hard to get in the past, where a lot of carriers and so forth can dictate what kind of applications are deployed on their platforms. Now these things actually allow us to, again, sort of transcend devices and take our identifiers with us, as well as sort of owning our identity in different contexts.
They'll take that as a feature request.
So the flip side to that, I'd say, is you're starting to see more and more phones go off decks. You can actually buy phones directly. And so they're looking for more ways to distinguish. So you might see more customization in the OS actually creating more fragmentation. So it's hard to see how that goes.
The nice thing about standards is there's so many to choose from for each solution. So I think, you know, the standards universe is such a tapestry. And some of these end up being proprietary technologies, you know, and in some cases, synchronization is one example where there's really no good, you know, prefetch and synchronization store. So we actually had to do all the heavy lifting to build our own in Zumobi. But eventually there will be a standard, and at that point we'll embrace it. So
okay. I think that. Thanks. George, I think this question might be for you. Define widget.
It depends what company you work for. If you think widget, then Apple, it's dashboard widget.
Gadget.
If you think from my aspect, or Microsoft, it's a gadget. From my perspective, it's a small, self-contained, usually within its own div, little application, and that could live and do, you know, its own particular function by itself, and could be embedded within a blog or a mobile phone or some sort of desktop experience.
Like portable functionality.
Yeah.
Also, one experience might break apart into a bunch of different widgets. So like when we were taking the Amazon.com site and figuring out what does that look like as a widget, it's not a widget. It's 10 widgets, one for DVD, one for search, one for music. So I mean, widgets are just a nugget of information that you can do something very specific and fast.
Portable functionality and easy to develop.
Yeah.
Next, is it right, however you define that term, rights, to fragment the web by creating device-dependent mobile experiences, for example, the iPhone, or should we be creating experiences that are accessible by many devices?
We shouldn't fragment the web in general, like IE8. So fortunately, you know, we solved that problem. Generally, I think, you know, being able to write once is awesome, but the reality is that we're still in a transitional period, and we will be for the next several, probably years, figuring out how we actually condense much, you know, expectations that are set at 1024 by 768 down to something much, much smaller.
I think that should be the job of the browser. It should be able to handle the full web and transcode that properly. There's a lot of interesting technology out there in the mobile industry where they're attempting to transcode websites for different screen sizes to minimize development. But I actually will pull an analogy from the game industry where they actually build a 3-target platforms when they build a game. They typically build low-end, mid-end, and high-end. And I sort of see them as sort of the leader in terms of building apps because they pump out 100 apps a week. So see what they do next.
And we don't all have to stand arm in arm and agree on it, right? I mean, this is a very organic industry. There's, you know, just we'll hang out and wait for the dust to settle around a certain solution, and then we'll galvanize that as a standard and move on. But that's okay. That during that kind of time, you can still do dramatic things using proprietary approach.
Is there a big feature to developing iPhone apps and selling them on iTunes, or will everyone give everything away for free?
It's too soon to tell. Yeah. I mean, look at the jailbreak apps, right? So.
I actually think you're starting to see a lot more free. I think mobile advertising has sort of changed the whole dynamic of development. And, you know, if you go to AdMob, they do have iPhone ads, and they actually are doing pretty well. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see a lot of them go free.
Free has been a great business model for us, as you know, ad sponsored as opposed to charging the end user.
If you're willing to pay for it to turn off the advertising, I think some people are willing
to pay. Like Twitter. And there's also a great article this month in Wired about sort of like the free economy, and that's really worth looking into. Because also it's about driving your service through the usage of a free application that you give away, but that maybe you charge for other features, you know, that are available through the desktop version.
The speed of speech is
and that's a paradigm verbal shift, compression. Sort of free versus pro edition. I was going to say real quick, I think there's going to be free, probably going to be more of a subscription than there is probably going to be just a one-time fee.
Okay, how will Android affect the mobile internet? Will I have to pay, die? Will I have to dev for iPhone, Android, or other?
Well, yeah. The good thing is that they're all WebKit. So,
if it's a web app right now, but you have to look at it. You know, if you're going to do a native app on iPhone, it's, you know, Cocoa, Objective-C. If you're going to do Android, it's a flavor variant of J2ME. If you're going to do anything else, then it's J2ME.
Fragmentation.
Yeah. Does that have to do with tools, too? I mean, we talked about how Xcode tools are really only available on the Mac. So,
if you're going to build for Android, you're going to be usually working within Eclipse.
Yeah.
How do mobile browsers differ on an essential level from desktop to mobile browsers?
I'll take this since I work on browsers. It's significantly different. So even within the mobile browser space, there's different tiers. So there's sort of what they call mass market browsers, which you're going to see on the hundreds of millions low end Nokia phones, which
Upper Mini,
which basically don't support JavaScript. It's XHTML 1.0, maybe CSS 1, maybe CSS 2, maybe. And then you have the higher end of the spectrum, richer smartphone browsers, where you may have Ajax support, maybe Flash Lite support. But definitely no codec support, definitely not going to be able to load Google Maps, definitely not going to be able to watch YouTube. So there's it's really a low-end experience.
John, this is a question for you. Does Mobile 6 have a chance to dominate the market when its footprint is so heavy and requires so much user maintenance?
Is mobile, I missed one word in there. Does mobile have a chance to dominate the market when its footprint is so heavy and requires so much user maintenance? Oh, Windows Mobile 6. I mean, look, there's a lot of different operating systems out there. I don't think that at this stage, there's probably not one clear player that's going to overnight dominate. We'll see. I think that the trick is to, we actually, one of the reasons why we were spun out, I took my patent portfolio out of Microsoft is because we recognized in order to do a mobile advertising play, we need to be cross-device, cross-platform, cross-carrier. We need to target BlackBerry and Windows Mobile and iPhone and other things. So we're completely organizationally independent of Microsoft. But I do think that, Windows Mobile has been a great platform as our first to the marketplace. And it's true that some have larger, smaller footprints. But if you look at, up to date, these smartphone platforms have actually been a pretty approachable development environment. So They're not as cramped as one might think.
Okay, and I think this is about a specific audience, but I think it could apply to anyone. What advice would you give to designers, art directors of digital magazines who would like for their e-publications to be readable on mobile devices?
Do everything in just traditional web markup, HTML and CSS. Don't try to stick PDFs down the mobile pipeline. Don't try to do things in Flash because you're going to really limit the amount of eyes you're going to have looking at.
I'd say that's an investment question. How much money you want to invest? You could if you wanted to do something for free, you could take one of the generic transcoders that are out there, and they'll transcode your site. Probably won't look very good, or build a version of your site with what he just said stripped out, and then run the transcoder through it, and it'll probably look a lot better. So that's really how much money you want to invest.
Yeah, look back to that continuum, right? So the nice thing about magazines is they're already subsetted based on demographic. So if there's a high degree of demographic overlap between your audience of your magazine and a certain device, like an iPhone or a BlackBerry, then maybe it makes sense to lovingly craft a gorgeous native application for that target device, especially if it has a high, attach rate for your target audience. If you're a broad publication like Time, you want to go to the other end of the spectrum and have something that can be read everywhere.
What's the most common newbie mistake that you see going from a desktop or web application to mobile?
Testing. I don't think they take it. That's definitely a newbie mistake. So when I talk to folks who are new to mobile, they don't realize how much testing is involved in mobile. You go to any of these mobile game companies, you're going to see 200 phones on their shelf because they do actually test across all these phones. I'm not saying you have to do that, and that's what we want to move away from, but definitely make sure you keep in mind that there is a testing process. And doing your testing with the community is a pretty common approach for doing it on the cheap.
For me, probably the most annoying thing is when you go to a mobile application, and it's usually an input field, and it should be only numeric, and you insert your insertion point and it comes up alphanumeric. You're like, oh, that's such an easy fix to, they should have just done that in the form design. But
yeah,
very annoying.
Allow plenty of time for iteration between tests too, because there's going to be a lot of kung fu you're going to have to do between each iteration, both on the usability side and on the engineering side, to make it run consistently on the more constrained environment of a mobile phone.
Yeah, and for the most part, I would be very, very cautious about what you take for granted. I know that Twitter spends a lot of time, just going through and fixing all the quirks for different browsers and different handsets.
to apologize to the audience. I think they just went over, but I forgot to time them. All right, what is the endpoint vision of the mobile device? Given the small screen and extreme diversity of mobile devices, what are some new strategies using voice recognition and text messaging like Jot to deliver mobile content?
I mean, from a rich media perspective, delivering mobile content, so like how would you use the device in different form factors?
I think the answer is think multimodal. You're definitely seeing more and more apps integrate. Haptic feedback is one of the things, you know, their solution for touchscreen text input. So think multimodal, and they're opening up the APIs to allow you to integrate all of that.
Yeah, this is subject of my research for a while, and I think that the there's a lot to say here, but mainly, you know, if you think particularly on the world scale where most parts of the world, this is someone's primary computing device. Again, factoring forward just a few years, don't think about just the interaction techniques on the device itself. Think about when you walk into a room and the device will Bluetooth discover display resources, input resources, keyboard, mouse, and the environment. You know, very quickly, I think more quickly than any of us anticipate, this will become a primary computing device for most computing tasks. And, you know, again, 10 years from now, having a laptop computer or a portable, you know, computer that requires a flat horizontal surface will be just as quaint.
Okay, so before we end the panel, each panelist is going to tell us what they want you to walk away with. So one or two sentences about their final words on what you should walk out of this room with. Chris?
So I guess I would just say, in general, bet on the open web. That's kind of where a lot of this stuff needs to go and has been going. And I would say ask a lot more from browser manufacturers, predominantly, you know, Apple and Mozilla. Those guys obviously are sort of your open source friends, and that's where I think the stuff needs to continue going.
I mean, to this audience, I would simply say, play, have fun. You know, you got to start building stuff and experimenting. You know, I'll plug that if you fly by dev.zoomobi.com, it's actually a great way to get started with very low bar. You can build a mobile widget if you have a back-end data service. Laughably easy to make a little tile, which is our mobile widget. But just start tinkering around and playing with this experience of mobile. You'll learn a lot very, very quickly by doing. It's a whole new world, but it's an exciting time.
I was going to reiterate what he said. Start low end. One of the common mistakes I see, I do a lot of consulting, and these agencies will spend a ton of money and they want to build out a very grand mobile vision, and then they finally execute it and they realize users are only using one or two features of the whole service. So if you can do something really cheap, like build a widget taking advantage of Nokia's existing, you know, widget platform or whatever it is, I would start there, see how it's being used, and then determine how much budget you want to put towards your mobile strategy.
For me, coming back to Chris's point, definitely bet on the open web, but more importantly, think about starting low and progressively being able to scale high. And that comes back to the progressive enhancement, graceful degradation methodologies within HTML5 and CSS. But more importantly, as these standards, HTML5 and CSS3 are becoming more mature and about to be ratified, study them. Because what you're going to find inside of these specs is probably very inspirational to you, and you'll find a lot of useful techniques that you really will question, why am I going to even use Flash going forward? So definitely read up on that.
Great. That's all we have. Thanks very much. Thank you.